Welcome to Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro, powered by Beyond, where we dive heart first into all things events in the nonprofit world. Hi, I'm Amy Milne, your host and CEO of Beyond and the Nonprofit Event Collective, where we believe that your events matter. You're not just hosting an event, you're inviting people to join you in changing the world. We're here to talk tricks of the trade and share tales from the trenches so you can produce epic events that inspire participants, raise more money, and change lives. Let's dive in. I am beyond thrilled, grateful, and excited to welcome the one and only Cindy Wagman to Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro podcast today. Cindy and I launched our consulting businesses around the same time 8 years ago, and it has been a joy to watch this woman shine. Cindy is a seasoned fundraiser, leader, and fellow podcaster. She believes in the power of small nonprofits and the life-changing work they do. I believe Cindy can inspire anyone, and today I am glad she is here on the podcast to do that for you, our amazing listener. Sit back and enjoy while we get real on all things small nonprofit. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. I have been a guest on two of your podcasts because why have one?
Exactly.
When you're Cindy Wagman, like, why would you do that? I feel like you were one of the OGs in the whole nonprofit, you know, podcasting world. And I was very grateful to be on that to talk events. And then on your most recent podcast, which we will link in the show notes for everyone, because I was just saying to you before I press record, you have some incredible guests and I can listen to you and your wisdom always. So as I go on about knowing you, our listeners may not know you. So let me and our listeners know a little bit about you.
Yeah. I mean, where to start? I feel like I have so many different versions of myself over the years. And my most recent one is a little new, but I knew I wanted to be a fundraiser, like in university. And so I've basically been a fundraiser ever since. And I started consulting. I started my company, The Good Partnership, almost 8 years ago. And that has evolved a lot over time. And I would describe it now as I talk about being sort of the place for the fractional fundraising movement. So I help small nonprofits, or I help fundraisers build fractional fundraising businesses, and I help small nonprofits find those fractional fundraisers so that they can raise more money.
Which every small nonprofit wants to do so they can become bigger.
Exactly.
What does fractional mean for those folks who may not know?
Yeah. So it's kind of, basically, I don't know if there's a singular definition, but the way I describe it is that if you think the organization is getting a fraction of someone's time, but usually it's someone who's highly experienced or an expert. So a director, CDO level experience, but they're getting a fraction of it, which also means they're only paying for a fraction of it, which makes it a lot more affordable for small organizations to afford expert help.
Right. So smart. Why small? Why? I mean, you know, for someone, and small, I think, however we just decide to define small, it just is the easiest way versus right now. But, you know, for someone who's been passionate about fundraising since university, you know, how did you end up with small?
Yeah. So my heart's always been in small organizations. I kind of got sucked into this like professional vortex of like climbing the ladder. I worked in small organizations and then I was like, I feel stuck. And so I eventually ended up as the director of development at the business school at the University of Toronto. And like, you could not get further from where I started. And so when I started consulting, I knew that small organizations were where I wanted to have an impact. And I felt like they could benefit the most from the work I wanted to do. So that was always been the sort of cornerstone of my business. That's not to say other people can't work with larger organizations as fractional fundraisers, but small ones are uniquely positioned to benefit from that type of support because they typically don't have an in-house fundraiser. As soon as you're investing in full-time staff, you're starting to build a team, Mm-hmm. That model doesn't necessarily work in the same way. That being said, we have worked with some medium-sized organizations during transition periods and stuff like that. So there's always exceptions, but small organizations, I think, are on the front line of social justice and meaningful movements, and that's really important for me.
Absolutely, and I think we can find, or we know we can find incredible inspiration from the small because they haven't traveled so far away from their cause and mission that they're just running a business.
Yeah.
So that's super, super awesome. So we in our time together in many conversations over the years, because I started my event consulting business around the same time that you did. I can't believe it'll be 8 years in April. I feel like we're the fractional event side of the coin. And you and I have had many conversations over the years about where events, you know, typically fall inside small organizations with the variety of events that are out there. You know, I mean, I come from a place where it's like, you know, I started in the big, like I started with the Weekend and the Ride and the Big Giants and then lots of money and all of that sort of thing. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm sure there's some small, and you can offer some insight. I'm sure there's some small charities that are like, and nonprofits are like, oh my God, we want the next Weekend in Breast Cancer. I feel like you and I have even had the start of that conversation. So, you know, share where, like, let's start to talk about where events fit in small and what do those look like?
Yeah. So I think what I see happen a lot for small organizations is FOMO, where they see big organizations and they think, especially I see this around the board table a lot, where people don't know what fundraising really is. And what we think about fundraising publicly, like I get, when I introduce myself at some random, you know, event or what have you, the first thing people ask is, oh, so you plan events. So non-fundraisers don't understand that fundraising events are only a small part of what fundraising is. So there's this sense that we need to be like all these other people or all these other organizations and have a really big fundraising event, whether that's a gala or a weekend or a walkathon or what have you. There's sort of this assumption or FOMO that I see. But when we start to peel back like the role of events for small organizations, I think there's a lot of room for creativity and relationship building and bringing people in closer to the mission. And, you know, over the years, you and I have talked about this, which is like find your why first. But I definitely think that there's a hurdle in terms of educating the people around you around like, events are not just a big gala. It's not a rubber chicken dinner. There's so many ways to go about doing this.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you talk about finding your why, and one of the biggest things that we do when we work with our clients, and I know it's where you spend your time too on the side of the fence that you work on, is, you know, what is that event and why would you do it in terms of like why would that matter to your organization and to others in terms of bringing people to your organization? Now, the thing is, and you know, a lot of the mid to larger size orgs that, you know, host the big walks and runs and rides and galas, you know, they'll speak about it being a marketing ploy as much as like bringing a bunch of people to the table. I would think you still need to get people to your table in this small, because those are your donors and your supporters and things like that. So how do you set up an event program for, or just get people into the org through events when it's small?
Yeah. So, I mean, the answer is always, it depends, right? But I'll give you some example. Like I'll give you my favorite example is like, I love using events for deeper relationships and building, identifying new, like mid to high level donors. But there's also like organization, and I'll tell you about that, but there, you know, for some organizations it's more community building. Like it really depends. But, you know, I was doing some work with Hot Docs International Film Festival. And one of the things I always start, anytime I start fundraising for an organization, I always meet their donors. I want to know why you care, why you're giving, you know, who cares enough to volunteer and, you know, get roll up their sleeves. So I started meeting with some of their donors and board members, and it really became clear that they loved the experience of seeing documentaries in a community, like with people, but then talking about the documentary after. And so what we did to build out our sort of patrons program, and I was running a capital campaign, so build relationships with capital campaign prospective donors and meet new prospective donors. So we said, okay, well, why don't we do, we'll have a screening and then we'll have a small event, cocktail reception after, and we're going to invite like three people to sort of co-host it. These are existing donors and supporters, and we're going to ask them to invite their friends. And so it allowed us to really quickly build a prospect list for this campaign and bring people closer to the organization, because damn, those movies were so effective, but and really engage them so that they really felt connected to us as staff. Right. So for example, if there's 20 people in the room, I'm likely to have a good conversation at that event with 10 to 15 of them.
Right.
That you would not have the opportunity to do at a big event. And I used to do even like dinners, like 8 to 12 people. And over the course of the night, I would actually have really great conversations with all of them. So those small events were instrumental to us being successful in that campaign.
Well, because bigger isn't always better. And no matter what size of your organization, and I think more, and this is something, you know, as we move through this, you know, post-lockdown era of, you know, that human connection. And to your point, when you're trying to connect with people and you throw thousands of them in the room, there's absolutely a benefit to that.
Yeah.
For sure. But it comes back to like what you said, knowing your why. If part of your, you know, part of your why is this, you know, giant gala cocktail party and then a walk, run, ride, but like that small stuff matters more than ever, no matter what size your organization is, I believe.
Yeah. I've also been noticing that people get fatigued, like social fatigue. I don't think that's an actual thing, but
I'm going to
call it that. Yep. Where we're so used to being alone and away from people that it's actually fairly overwhelming to be with that many people. And I think like the conferences that I've been to this past year and other events, people are a lot more exhausted. At the end of the day, they're just like, it takes a lot more energy to show up in ways that we've done for the rest of our lives, like through 2-3 years really set us back. And so I think, you know, doing the temperature check with your audience and what are they craving? And obviously you're not going to please everyone, but meeting them where they are so that it's as we get back to whatever this new normal looks like.
Well, and it's paying attention to what's happening around us, right? Like it's taking our own experiences and helping influence our clients and our partners to be like, this is what we're seeing and experiencing. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things, you know, as consultants, we have the opportunity to do is see so much more outside of just being inside one spot. Because we're naturally, as entrepreneurs, we're involved in the whole entrepreneurial world and that entire layer of things and thinking in people. And then there's this entire, you know, scope of people we see inside the nonprofit sector and the different. So, I think we really have a pulse on what's happening right now. Yeah. And I would agree, like having been at a conference, I mean, I am a full on bring on the people, throw me in a big giant room, throw me in the middle of a 6,000 person run, walk, ride. I am like in heaven. But at the same time, you know, and you speak of conferences, like I was away a couple weeks ago at the Peer-to-Peer Forum in Washington, and I was just craving, it was so exciting to see people I hadn't seen in a long time, but I was so craving just a small sit down with people to like literally talk about where they're going, what they want to do, what does it look like. Like it was where before I'd be like, throw me in the bar. Let's have a big party. But now I was like, can we just do dinner?
Literally, I was at an event for an accelerator I was part of. And it was sort of like their wrap up celebration. And there was probably like 50 to 75 people there. But five of us were just like, this is fun, but
right,
no, let's go for dinner. So we left early and we're like,
had your own party.
Yeah, it was. And it's not that we didn't enjoy the bigger part, but I think that there's less elasticity or resilience around being on all the, like, in that way, at least for now.
For sure. One of the things that you said that I think is amazing, and so many people still don't, and not just in our sector, but in all sectors, is you said you talk to the donors. You said you asked, like, you know, Cindy, what an amazing concept. I'm flip a little bit because I think there's still this fear. I'm hopeful that as we've come out of this haze, we realize we need to be more focused. We need to be more, you know, relatable to our customer and our customers, our donor. So tell me about talking to your donors and how do you get people to agree to do that?
So this is like my number one soapbox that I will stand on.
Yay.
Yeah. In fact, I even wrote, like, it's a big part of my, the book that I wrote, which is Raise It, The Reluctant Fundraiser's Guide to Raising Money Without Selling Your Soul.
Love it.
Which is a very long title, but basically, and even like talking to, it's really not, it's listening. What you're doing is just getting to know the people that you, that are your donors. It's really not complicated, but because in society we have all these weird things about money and the power and power, and like, you know, in our sector, we sort of like other our donors a lot and it becomes really intimidating. The reality is they are just people. And it, like, if we don't know them, we cannot build effective fundraising programs or events because we don't know who we're trying to attract or communicate with.
Right.
So it's really not complicated, but everyone makes it out to be very complicated. If you can have a conversation, if you know how to ask a couple good open-ended questions, you can do that, and you should do that on a regular basis. I like to encourage people to make it a habit. So reach out to donors, have a couple meetings every month. Just make it your routine to actually build those relationships and know the people that are giving to your organization.
Right.
So, and there's so many benefits. I should say, like, I mean, we talk about the benefit of like knowing who your audience is, but also that's how you find who your champions are. The people, like, if you're running peer to peer, that's how you're figuring out who those volunteers are. You know, if you're, some of those people are going to help you get sponsorship or sell tickets or raise major gifts, or, you know, there's so many benefits that come out of those conversations. And at the end of the day, it also, I just think, makes our work more meaningful because we typically are, we like people.
Yeah. You know? Well, and I think what's so interesting is the evolution of, you know, both our nonprofit organizations and then what we do. So if it's an event or an ask or what have you, is that often, I mean, so many times the nonprofits that we know started with one person's plight in life. And I would think that you see that a lot with your smaller nonprofits, that it started with like a small group of founders or one person. And that one person, so you could translate that from a small being there, you know, they're the start of it all, to like someone else driving the ship at a larger organization, that you're fighting, you're using their words versus the words of, you know, in which to support.
Yeah. And so like there's three audiences, or there's, I would say, three buckets of like whose words show up in our work. So there's the like internal jargon that we organizations love to use. And usually it's, no one knows what you're talking about outside of your work. And then there's your community, like your service users or the, you know, the people you serve. And there's language that they use and that also is empowering to them. And then there's the language your donors use. So I would say the most important is to find where your donors and your service users intersect. And sometimes your internal jargon can come through as well. Right. But you want to make sure that you're meeting donors where they are, but you're also not undermining the work that you do as an organization and your mission. And so, yeah, there's lots. I mean, there's a whole like body of work and knowledge around that. Sure. But yeah, we could, that's a very long conversation.
It's a whole day somewhere else. In terms of, so obviously some of your small orgs absolutely host events, whether they're like the small ones that you were just speaking of, or, you know, some could be 50 to 100 people, let's just say. Where does corporate, you know, for those of our listeners who are small nonprofits and they're like either looking to start or maybe not, you know, where does corporate fit in for a small, and tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah.
I can see you smiling because we're looking at each other. Yeah. Our listeners can't, but I'm like, I'm waiting for this.
Okay. So I think that people fundamentally don't understand corporate giving. Mm-hmm. I would say that for small organizations, corporate support around events looks like two different things. Mm-hmm. One is what we traditionally think of around like marketing, right? Mm-hmm. It's how many people, are you in front of the right audience? How are you engaging them during that time? What outcomes are you looking for? That is marketing. And that can still happen in small mm-hmm. events. You might have like really targeted audiences mm-hmm. that your organization wants to get in front of. So we were doing some work with the Real Asian Film Festival. And like, that's a very specific primary mm-hmm. audience that they have. And mm-hmm. so that has a lot of value to certain sponsors. So there's that kind of sponsorship mm-hmm. and it can happen in small events. But then there's also the like, hey, buddy, do me a favor, which happens a lot. And there's nothing wrong with it. We just have to understand that that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Is like, you know, someone who's basically going to cut you a check from their company and sponsor your event. And I'm using air quotes, mm-hmm. but it's not, they don't actually care about what recognition right. they're getting. They're just doing something that feels good to them. Very rarely do I see, like, I think most small organizations, they just think like, oh, the big banks and, you know, we need sponsorship mm-hmm. from these companies that they see sponsor a lot of the really big things. Mm-hmm. And those are, I think, very hard to find mm-hmm. because you oftentimes, like, maybe you can get a small local branch to do something, right. but don't apply through their national, like, applications. Right. It's just not aligned with what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think there's a huge opportunity for small nonprofits with small to mid-sized businesses as well. You know,
yes.
Oh, I mean, yes. I have not only Beyond, I have another small business where I live in the Blue Mountains area, Collingwood area. And I would love to support as a public person and a sponsor and a business owner in this community. Yeah. I don't necessarily today have $10,000 that I can donate, but if someone came to me and said, do you have $1,000? Mm-hmm. Or do you have $1,000+? You know, could you also do some decor for us or what yeah. have you? You know, I'd be into that. But
yeah,
I feel like we don't get asked as small nonprofits to small businesses.
Yeah. So small nonprofits think that small businesses have no money.
Right.
In the same way that we think generally people don't have any money, which right. is, both are right. not true.
Nope.
But yeah, so we don't want to put people out by asking. Mm-hmm. But yes, I actually saw this done really well on the East Coast where there really only are. That's not true. There are some big industries, but, you know, a lot of the supporters were like the local hotel, not the big hotel chain or the right. local brewery. And so there's definitely, like when I worked at a women's shelter, a lot of the corporate support we got were like, it was out in Rexdale, which is like Northwest Toronto. And there's not a lot of storefront type businesses, but there's actually a lot of B2B stuff or a mm-hmm. lot of like supply chain and things mm-hmm. like that. And those companies wanted to support in their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And so they would give or they'd get a table for our fundraising mm-hmm. event. I think that that's one of the biggest untapped markets is mm-hmm. smaller businesses. The problem is most of us don't know them or they don't come to mind or we right. just don't know that they exist. So right. you have to be a little bit more strategic and think about it.
Well, and I think, you know, you also, like, they're the businesses when you talk about B2B, and, you know, there's transport companies that make tons of money.
Oh my God.
But they're not TD on a sponsorship poster.
Yeah.
But the thing is that if we don't educate or go to these people to tell them about our cause,
yeah,
then they don't know. And so they might just default to donating to someone who's running in this a kid's walk or,
yeah,
well, I don't know how you run in a walk, but, you know, but it's like they might, because they don't know. And so to yeah. me, I think there's a huge opportunity there for people to, you know, whether you're small or big, start tapping yeah. these like not well-known businesses, because there's not just one group of businesses making money. And I think especially for small nonprofits, they're often in small communities. Or like that was the biggest thing leaving Toronto. I mean, I still do a lot in Toronto and a lot of my life is still there. But now living in this community and I've immersed myself in it and I started a business in it because I wanted to hire locally. I wanted to give back locally. I wanted the dollars that I make locally to go yeah. back into the community in which I serve and am serviced from. And so, you know, if they reach out to me,
yeah,
I'm going to, being a fundraiser like yourself, we're naturally going to like go find the places. But if I was approached and someone was like, hey, could you do this? I'd be open to having a conversation and then figuring yeah. out how we could do that both financially and in kind.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've seen pretty much universally across our sector is we overestimate the capacity to give of people who we think, quote unquote, have money or are wealthy or are right. philanthropists. So we see names like the Westons and the, you know, we can all list off yeah, all these totally. Big names.
They're on every big event you see in the globe every weekend. Yeah. Totally.
And so we think those are the people who have capacity mm-hmm. and we actually overinflate their capacity. So we think they must have more, like they can, everyone should ask them. They should mm-hmm. be giving to everyone. And we underestimate the capacity of basically everyone else who usually, and I've seen this over and over and over again, where like I'll see a donor in an organization and they're giving like $100 and they have capacity to give 10,000 mm-hmm. or 100,000. Mm-hmm. And so the same is true with corporate, where we associate like the names that we know, the banks, there's some insurance, you know, yeah. the big players, we think that they're just like a faucet of money that right. you just like, well, put your cup under it and it's going to fill up. But we underestimate the capacity of all the other businesses out there. Mm-hmm. And they want, like, I've only ever had conversations right. with them. Sometimes there isn't capacity.
Right.
But chances are there's some capacity, okay. even if it's for like $1,000 or $500 yeah. or in kind or things mm-hmm. like that. So
totally. And I think, you know, it goes back to when you said, you know, talk to your donors, it's getting to know the people in the community. To just broad stroke everyone with a brush that says, oh, anyone below this can't give. It's like, is that lazy? Is it just old habit? Is it, you know, that fear of, you know, that you and I know that if you don't ask, you can't have someone say no to you. But if you don't ask, you can't have someone say yes to you. Yeah. And so, you know, I think there's people that care about our missions, no matter where they work or what companies they own. Yeah. And I think it goes back to, it's going to take some work to find those people. But once you do, they can be lifelong supporters. And I would yeah. think, especially in this small space, like I think yeah. I just see, you know, I asked you, you know, why small? And I just think because it's just ripe with opportunity. Small doesn't mean unsuccessful. Small yeah. is just a niche.
It does not take a lot to move the needle.
No.
Like at all. It takes consistency yeah. and showing up and doing the work. But at the end of the day, you can be really successful without that much extra work.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that I spoke to a colleague on another episode, my colleague and friend, Rick Kelly, who works at a nonprofit in Detroit, Michigan, we were talking about partnerships amongst charities of different sizes. What kind of conversations are you finding amongst your small nonprofits these days? What do you see as the future there, if there is one?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've seen some partnerships, but not a ton. I'm trying to think of any specific examples, and I actually can't. So it's not that prevalent. But also, I just think oftentimes they're just not doing enough to be able to benefit from, like, to actually get their shit together to form a partnership, specifically around events. Oftentimes, I just think it's just like that big, overwhelming, you know, thing that they don't understand and they can't start in terms of figuring things out. So yeah, I don't actually have a great answer. I haven't seen anything that creative.
I know. I think there's opportunity. Like I think, you know, we started an event pre-COVID and haven't brought it back just yet. But one of the event concepts that I had was to have multiple charities involved so that I could pick an event concept. And so we created an event concept and then we invited local charities to participate so that they could have their own teams and fundraise from one big event versus them having to take it all on. And so there was capacity.
I remember that. Yeah.
So, and we want to bring it back because I think, because my whole thing is twofold. Some small nonprofits, as we've just talked about, can't afford the big splash, but sometimes the big splash does help. Well, we know it can help. It can't hurt necessarily unless they take it all on and it doesn't work. So we kind of took on the risk of some of that. But then what it also did, it was, you know, when I put myself in the mind of the participant and the donor was, you know, I might gather my five girlfriends and animals might really matter to me, but childhood mental health might matter to someone else and the arts might matter to someone else. And so for me, what that did was it created an incredible platform for our nonprofits, our smaller nonprofits, to be a part of an event of a size they normally wouldn't have been a part of. Yeah. And it allowed our participant and the donor to rally around a cause they believed in and then participate in a really fun event that their friends were at instead of me going to the Wiggle Waggle Walk and you going to the Pogo, you know, pajama party, because those are the causes in which you support. Yeah.
I definitely remember when you first mentioned this years ago, and I was like, that's so cool. I mean, the closest thing I can think of is something like this. In Toronto, we have the Scotia Marathon, although I'm never running a marathon. So I definitely think that there's just like limited reach. In terms of who's able to participate, but I know a lot of small organizations love that event because they don't have to do a lot to participate. Right. And it gives people the opportunity to rally around support. So I definitely think that there's something to that concept.
Yeah, I think as we evolve and we, you know, just in general, as we look at the world, some of us look at the world a bit differently. We were talking about the education system, which could be a whole other conversation. But I think as we evolve, and I even saw that within the conference, that I think that we're all a little bit more open potentially to sharing something. I don't know what that is yet. And it's different for everyone. You know, I've said it probably already six times in probably every one of these podcasts, but I've said every time I've gotten on stage is that there's four banks on every corner and those banks never run out of money. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there could be four charities on the corner. And just because someone gives to your charity on the Northwest corner doesn't mean the one on the Southeast isn't going to survive.
Yes.
And so I think within that, as we evolve, small, medium, or large, what can we be doing to service ourselves and our clients and our mission better? And that might mean joining forces.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there is appetite. I think the biggest hurdle is just getting organized, like having that central, like someone's got to take the lead.
Right. Because it comes down to like, oh my God, how do they get that? Because like it goes right back. Like one of my favorite sayings that one of my coaches gave to me over the time was like, the how is none of your business. Mm-hmm. And I love that because the how can absolutely kill an incredible idea and an incredible brainstorming session as soon as someone tries to figure out how that's going to work.
Yeah.
Versus like, what are all these amazing things that we could do? You know, like putting six of your small nonprofits in a room and saying, okay, we want it. We see the value in events. We know we could do something. What does that look like? And instead of like, oh my God, but how are we going to split the money and how do the tax receipting work and all that? Because that we know those conversations have happened versus just like, what can we start to do as we move forward in our businesses where the how is none of our business until it needs to get to that point.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I could talk to you forever. There never is. And on so many things, you are an incredibly brilliant and talented and fantastic, amazing, good human, Cindy.
Thank you.
Always value my time that I get to invest with you. And I am grateful that I'm like super jazzed and pumped that I got to like interview you today.
Well, I always have time for you. It's
well, thanks.
Likewise, I just always enjoy our conversations.
It's pretty fun. And I think we're just going to continue changing the world. So All those amazing small nonprofits that are listening to us right now are going to want to get a hold of you and learn more about this fractional fundraising training program you're about to launch. There's so much. How is someone going to get a hold of you to learn more? Yeah.
So the hub for all of this fractional fundraising stuff is thegoodpartnership.com.
Perfect.
And if you're a fundraiser thinking about consulting, there's lots of resources for you there. And if you're a small organization that's looking for a fractional fundraiser, there's also information for you. And there's my podcast, The Small Nonprofit. But if you are an existing consultant and want to check out our other podcast for consultants, it's called Confessions with Jess and Cindy. And that is the URL, confessionswithjessandcindy.com.
Sweet. And we will, as per usual, we'll link all that in the show notes so everyone can click away and go and check everything out. There's not anything you don't do that isn't amazing, Cindy. So thank you for your time. And I look forward to our next conversation. Thanks so much for listening and doing good in the world. We see you. We can't wait for you to join us next time when we hear from another good human who will share their story, along with tips and tricks that will help you execute extraordinary events that are sure to have a lasting impact on your participants, beneficiaries, donors, and colleagues. Make sure you follow Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to rate and review the show so other Nonprofit Event Pros just like you can find our podcast so they too can create events that matter. Tune in next week to laugh, cry, and cheer with us on another episode of Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro. See you soon. Hey, good human. Are you hitting roadblocks with your events and marketing and need a bit of help to take it to the next level? We've got you. Sign up for our monthly hot seat coaching where we will answer your questions live on the podcast. That's right. You'll get to join me, Amy Milne, and my colleague, Lisa Cohen, right here on Real Talk for the Nonprofit Event Pro podcast. And we will share our expertise to help you with your specific questions. Sound good? Great. Fill out the quick form by following the link in the show notes and we'll take it from there. We're stoked to have you on the podcast, good human listener, to guide you through your current challenges. Keep it real.